Last year, Adam and I and a few hundred friends of DeSoto gathered in the Masonic Lodge inside a cemetery in the heart of Hollywood. Were we there to practice some dark rite? Some sinister ritual designed to bring deceased Star Trek actors back to the plane of the living? To bring an unholy horde of undead nerd celebrities to Earth to consume the brains of the living? No, we were just doing our live show of the Share Your Embarrassment Tour. It's our review of Star Trek V, and we filmed it. We just wanted to let you know to get ready for that live stream announcement coming next week. If you're a Max Fun member and you support our shows, you'll get access to discounted tickets from membership at MaximumFun.org. So, good time to make sure those emails are delivering properly to your inbox. Either way, we'll be announcing ticket links soon here and on our mailing list that you can sign up for at podshop.biz. The Share Your Embarrassment Tour is coming to your living room for one last stop, and you're not going to want to miss it.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. How are you doing this week, Adam?
I'm doing great.
I shouldn't say this week. We're releasing these twice a week. That's a silly thing for me to say.
Well, strike it from the record. We have that kind of power. We can make each other say whatever we want.
Yeah.
I'm doing great, though. It's Sunday morning. I'm in the basement of my home, a home I share with my wife.
Yeah.
I've had to escape and come down here to record the program. I spent all morning watching Star Trek episodes. Is this what it's like to be a single man?
I'm married, but my wife has been out of town a lot lately, so now she's back. So this episode I am recording while my wife is here with me in the apartment. I'm squirreled away up in the lofted area.
So she's listening to a one-sided conversation?
Yeah. Bless her heart.
Wow. She's amazing. I can't believe that. My wife could not stand to be in the house or the state even. She's on a trip to California, so she's not even here.
She's a wise woman.
You know, like the project of this show made me think of that John Hughes quote. Are you familiar with what he said about the hardest thing about being a writer is convincing your wife that lying on the sofa is work? And the hardest part of having a podcast about Star Trek is convincing my wife that watching Star Trek is work and talking about it is work.
I don't think she'll ever come around to that. From 1988 or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. It is a guiding principle of a Starfleet base. If you can't find it within yourself to stand up, tell the truth, you don't deserve to wear that uniform. We've got a doozy this time around, though. Home soil.
Season one,
episode 17.
Correct. So the Enterprise is, I think they're out doing some other stuff, but they're close enough to this terraforming colony on Valara 3. And communication's been a little spotty with this colony, and so they're going to go poke their heads in, check it out. It's not a Starfleet project, but it is a Federation project. And they get on the radio, and there's a little bit of silence until the director, Kurt Mandel, pops on FaceTime, and he's kind of blustery and, you know, wants to get off the phone as soon as he got on it. Basically tries to blow him off, and Troy keeps kind of whispering to Picard, like, he's hiding something.
Yeah, he's not like most old people when you get them on the phone and they just they just want to talk for hours.
They don't have any off switch, yeah.
So you can tell something's up just based
he's
on
no
that alone.
My uncle.
Yeah. He's no all grandpas.
This sort of interchange did make me wonder kind of how the microphones work on the bridge, because the first time Troy leans over and whispers in Picard's ear, it's like he's hiding something, which is kind of her typical thing that she says about somebody that is on the view screen, and then they have another like little interchange, and then she leans over again and Picard hits something to like mute his audio. And so I sort of wondered, like, are they implying that she, like, the first thing that she said was audible to him, or was her voice low enough that he wouldn't have heard it? Like, how does that work? Did I lose you? Hello?
No, I'm here. I'm just trying to come up with any kind of answer for that. I'm sorry. I can usually participate in a piece of minutia like that, but I'm just totally stumped. I don't know. I mean, and you'll see this all the time. Like, Picard will be FaceTiming with someone, and then he'll turn around and go, like, mute communication. But wouldn't the other person have heard him say the words, mute the communication?
Yeah.
I think this is another example of that.
There are a lot of things about how communication works in Star Trek that doesn't ever really get explained. Like, if you're on the bridge and you say Riker to Lieutenant LaForge, like, no matter where he is on the ship, Lieutenant LaForge is hearing Riker to Lieutenant LaForge.
Yeah.
But that's not going out on PA for everybody to hear. It's like the ship is anticipating who he wants to send a message to somehow.
Well, there's a couple of things at play. Like, I don't think you can just walk around saying Riker to LaForge. I think you have to stop if you're walking. You have to stop
yeah,
in place.
Yeah, you do have to stop walking.
Yeah, that's step one. Stop walking. Step two, you need to look upward. That I think, is critical.
Yeah, yeah.
Once the computer sees that you've stopped and that you're looking upward.
Not like up, but your eyes have to be higher than eye level.
Yeah, yeah. Just a, maybe like a 15 degree angle.
You're playing to the back
angle.
Row. Yeah.
And the computer's going to detect this. I mean, it knows what everyone's doing at any given point. So the computer's going to see Riker. He's stopped in a hallway. He's looking up. I think that's the point where it starts recording.
Maybe his if he tilts his hips in just such a way, the computer knows he's trying to reach Deanna Troi. If he kind of lets his voice drop a little
bit. If he starts thrusting, he's talking to Deanna.
Yeah, if he drops his voice a little bit, the ship knows he's trying to talk to Worf.
Yeah, I mean, I think you could probably count on one hand how many conversations happen while someone's walking. Never happens.
Yeah. It's a strange little part of the Star Trek universe.
I think we solved that mystery just by talking it out.
Yeah,
good job.
Good job, us. Shove it up your ass, Mission Log Podcast.
Yeah, seriously. God, I'd really be curious how many people listened to both Mission Log and this. I bet those Venn diagrams has like one circle in one spot and the other circle is like across the street.
Yeah.
There is no overlap.
Yeah. Mission Log is a very serious Star Trek podcast that whenever somebody mentions our show on the internet, people go, well, actually, there's already a show that does that, and it's this. And it's the most tired thing we see in any comments about our show.
It's sort of like how any mention of Wesley is followed by the boy. Any mention of The Greatest Generation is followed by some guy talking about Mission Log. So great. We know about Mission Log. Congratulations. If you like your Star Trek serious and unfun, go help yourself.
Yeah.
If you'd like an 18-page academic research paper on this program in podcast form, that's the one for you. If you want a bunch of dick jokes, this is your show.
We got them. We got them in spades.
Yeah.
This is going to be our Tupac Biggie.
Yeah.
This Star is Trek our hit podcast war. Yeah.
You know what? The thing is, we aren't both on the same coast. You're East Coast and I'm West Coast, so it isn't a coastal thing.
It's not a coastal thing when it came to the Star Trek podcast wars, but
do you
want to
be the Biggie
bloodshed.
Or do you want to be the Tupac? We could just choose which rapper we're affiliated with, and then we can make them the other.
Oh, I am in Brooklyn, so I think that obviously I'm Biggie.
Because I'm in Seattle, I want no part of Macklemore, so I will gladly take Biggie as my guy. So, fine. It's Biggie.
You could be the Butts guy. What's that guy's name?
Oh, the Butts guy. You're talking about the I Like Big Butts and I Cannot Lie?
Yeah. What's that guy's name? I can't believe I'm blanking on that.
Oh my god. This is going to require some heavy editing.
Sir Mix-a-Lot.
You know, a story came out in the Seattle paper recently where Sir Mix-a-Lot changed his cell phone number. And some rando got his old one. And the shit that came through on that phone number was as you would expect.
Yeah. Just booty calls?
Oh, man. So many butts.
Party invitations?
Yeah. People constantly wanting to party with him. People constantly wanting to show him their boobs.
People telling him that their posse is on Broadway?
Just, I don't know why you'd get rid of all that. He had to start all over. He was getting too many butt shots.
I mean, I guess there's something to be said for turning over a new leaf or terraforming your cell phone. Oh, jeez.
Yeah, that's... Wow, that's a championship transition right there.
I was trying to get us back into the episode, and I really regret it. I feel like Mission Log is probably the podcast that you should be listening to. I'm sorry, everybody.
If you like professional broadcast quality transitions, by all means, go check out Mission Log.
I haven't really listened to the show.
I haven't been able to get past the first 3 minutes before falling asleep. Do not listen to that show while you're driving, everyone.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Very dangerous. Consult your physician.
Yeah. If you want transitions that sound like someone falling down the stairs, this is your show. Welcome. You're among friends.
You will respond to my questions. I am Locutus of Bord. You are Bord.
Anyways, Mendel is getting a little panicky, and that's all the reason that Picard needs to send an away team down to see what the fuck is going on at this terraforming station on Valara 3.
And the image of the surface is amazing. Like, they cut to the structure and the map behind it, and they probably spend less time on this image than any other that we've seen up until now. It looks like, you remember the 8-bit video game boxes that Nintendo games used to come in, and they were like three-color treatment?
Yeah, yeah.
That's what this looks like. It's real bad.
Yeah, it's rough. So, anyways, the team is met by a Babelicious babe who is a terraforming... I think she's like a terraforming designer. She does something sort of downstream in the process from what most of the others do, but she's personable and takes them on a little tour of the facility, shows them what terraforming is. For those who don't know, it's the process of taking a planet that is inhospitable to human life and changing its environment to be more Earth-like.
Can we assume that the Genesis project was a failure at this point? Because that seems like the way that they would do it if it were successful.
Right. I guess they decided that the Genesis bomb was too fucking dangerous. Because it fell into Klingon hands that one time, right?
That's right.
I guess it was Khan shot it at that planet, right?
I guess if your terraforming device can be used as a weapon, I guess that's a reason not to use it.
Yeah. This episode has similar themes in certain ways.
They give this engineer like 20 minutes to discuss what terraforming is. I was shocked that she got to go over the terraforming story beginning to end. It was like the beginning to Jurassic Park.
Yeah. I'm in your blood.
First we take a planet that's dead and cold. I'm sad. I don't have any life on me.
Oh, are these auto erotica? No, 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 no. These are real scientists. That's my favorite joke in Jurassic Park. Nobody ever talks about how that guy says, are these auto erotica?
Yeah. I need life to make me happy.
First, we take the belt, and then we put it around our neck.
If you don't have a belt, you can use a plastic bag, like dry cleaning comes in.
The other scientists there are, I will describe as bald guy and mullet guy, and they are...
Oh, man, can we... We're going to make this hair cast again.
Yeah, yeah,
another hair cast. Bjorn Benson's power mullet is amazing. It is, it's like a bike helmet stuck to the back of a bike helmet. And I got so excited my voice cracked during that description.
But a bald guy wanders into the drilling room, which has like an automatic laser in it, and he's off screen for about 45 seconds before we start hearing him scream. And, you know, Riker and Data and Geordi all run over to see what's going on. And
it's the sort of screaming you only hear behind the door of a holodeck when Riker's inside.
Can you open it? It's jammed.
Mendel can't get the door open, but when they finally do, it's clear that the scientist guy has been fragged by this drilling laser.
Yeah, he's smoking on the floor.
Yeah. And they're still not even sure if they can get into the room because the laser might be active. Finally get it powered down. Yar runs in headlong, beams up with the body to sickbay, and they're pretty freaked out. They're pretty shaken by this whole sitch.
Yeah, it's a scene of robot murder.
Yeah, and they don't know like who was controlling the laser or what was controlling the laser, and this sort of turns into like a cool like detective episode. Like Picard kind of determines a series of things that he wants looked into, starts delegating tasks.
Data, I want you and Geordi to return for more careful inspection. What are we to look for, sir? Evidence of tampering, negligence. Sabotage, whatever. The answer's there on the planet. Tasha, I want you to provide Counselor Troy and me with complete personnel record of our three guests. Psych profiles, training, everything. I'm looking for motive, intent, the psychological capacity to commit one murder to attempt another.
Aye, sir.
Seems we are becoming detectives, number one.
It's a real detective story without any of the ridiculousness of Data dressing up like a Sherlock Holmes guy.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's one of the great benefits of him playing it straight is... you don't get that smirking pipe situation that you got from him a couple episodes ago. Yeah. So they start this investigation, and wouldn't you know it, they recreated the situation that caused that murder to begin with. So Data's in the laser room, hitting the buttons, setting things up again.
Yeah.
And shit starts going crazy again.
Yeah, the door slams shut.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that's hilarious is Data's talking to Geordi from behind the door, telling him that the laser's trying to kill him.
Yeah.
And Geordi's like, it's not working again. Like, you remember that thing that happened 5 minutes ago that killed the other dude? The exact same thing is happening. Wouldn't
yeah,
you know
yeah,
it?
Yeah, Geordi, I know.
When you do the exact same thing two times in a row, the exact same outcome happens. It's bizarre.
Yeah.
So very Data strange. Uses his super speed to dodge the laser, but it turns out the laser is learning. And he finally... basically tears the laser off the ceiling to disable it, and the door opens.
Yeah, and the mullet guy is like, dude, what the fuck did you do to my laser?
Yeah, he's pissed off about the laser, whereas they almost lost the one-of-a-kind robot person to the laser. So I think his priorities are a little messed up.
I kind of wish Geordi would have backhanded him for that little comment.
Geordi's
like,
what
soft, are you, nuts?
Yeah, Geordi's way kind of soft. He's not going to do
he's
that.
He's a nice guy. Nice guys finish last.
Data could have just punched his head off. You ever think about that?
Yeah.
Like how he could basically tear anyone limb from limb?
Yeah.
He's really the velociraptor of the show.
Yeah. Just imagine if he can learn to open doors. He wouldn't have had to dodge that laser.
Yeah, it's true.
But everybody clears out but Geordi and Data, and they're like looking around this room, and... Data notices something down one of the shafts that this drilling laser has been boring, and that is enough to have him call over Geordi, and Geordi uses his supervisor sight on this thing and is totally blown away. I love Geordi's reaction in this scene.
Geordi, I need some visual assistance. Whoa. What is it?
Basically, he's looking down a well at a single Christmas light. So he really sells it.
Yeah. Well, he does sell it because he's like, it's like music. It's, you know, there's complex rhythms and different wavelengths and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, he's seeing a lot of things that we can't see.
Yeah. He took a tab of acid before he headed to the transporter room.
My love is a fever, long and chill.
put your best foot forward and present your new business project or political thing as well as you possibly can on the internet. How do you do that? Not through some cookie cutter form on a social media website or trying and failing to code a pretty website yourself. No, you go to Squarespace, start using their completely new guided design system, Squarespace Blueprint, which helps you choose from professionally curated layouts and styling options that help you build a unique online presence from the ground up that is tailored to your brand or business. Squarespace has been a super loyal sponsor of The Greatest Generation. We hope you will give them a try. Go to squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/scarves to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
Personal grooming is less about something I do for myself, even though there are myriad reasons for that, and more about my consideration for other people who have to look at me, be around me, and on special occasions, love me physically. And when it's clear my front and backyards are becoming overgrown and unsightly, I'll break out the mower, the Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra from Manscaped. This Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra is really something else. This trimmer features two interchangeable next-gen skin-safe blade heads, a standard one for taking a little off the top, a new foil blade to go smooth wherever your heart desires. Listen, spring cleaning doesn't just apply to your nether regions. Get the full grooming experience with Manscaped's signature Beard Hedger Pro Kit and Handyman Electric Face Shaver. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants, right?
It's Webby season. Hi, I'm Sequoia Holmes, host of the Black People Love Paramore podcast, and we are nominated for a Webby for the episode where I interviewed Hayley Williams. In case you're unfamiliar, Black People Love Paramore is a podcast delving into the common and uncommon interests of Black people in order to help us feel more seen. We would love your vote to help us win this Webby. Please take a second and go over to the Black People Love Paramore podcast social media accounts, and you can find them at BPLP Pod across all social media platforms. Hit the link in bio and vote for Black People Love Paramore.
Hi, I'm Travis McElroy.
And I'm Teresa McElroy.
And we're the host of Schmanners.
We don't believe that etiquette should be used to judge other people.
No, on Schmanners, we see etiquette as a way to navigate social situations with confidence.
So if that sounds like something you're into,
join us every Friday on Maximum Fun, wherever you get your podcasts.
Not knowing what this thing is, but suspecting it may be a part of the story of what's going on with this terraforming station. They beam it up to a medical lab on the Enterprise, and Dr. Crusher and Data do some analysis on it that sort of starts to indicate that this is a non-organic life form. It's a silicon-based life form. And it's like, I thought that this was actually pretty well done and interesting. Like, they kind of arrive at this as a hypothesis, and then they spend like several plot points gathering more data on it before they're totally sure that it is a life form.
Yeah, you get a description of the scientific method there if you didn't know it before. Like they're pretty informative about that.
And it's like too late to do anything about it, because it, like, by the time they're like totally sure, it's pretty powerful. And I thought that was like, I feel like that's kind of science works like that sometimes. You know, you're like, you can't just like come off half-cocked drawing some crazy conclusion like this, but by the time they're confident enough to say for sure, this thing has divided and divided again until there's several of these molecules, and it's essentially a computer intelligence that is naturally occurring.
I mean, we're praising how the crew has scienced the shit out of this situation, but I mean, they did take something they didn't understand and beam it on board the ship. Like, in another example of just great security protocol.
Yeah, and then when the quarantine beam didn't work on it the first time, they didn't just immediately beam it back off the ship. They were like, well, I guess the quarantine's not not going to work. We'll just quarantine the whole section of the ship.
Yeah, is there anything they're doing in that lab that they couldn't do in that piece of garbage station down on the surface? I mean, the laser has already destroyed most of it. Why not just do the test down there?
Seems safer.
Yeah. Yeah, doesn't make sense.
I do not love thee with my eyes, baby. A thousand heresy, but 'tis my
they're doing this test, and they slowly come to realize that, you know, by some measure, this qualifies as a life form. It doesn't check all the boxes of life, but it checks enough of them to where they're willing to believe that it's a life form.
Right, and probably this planet should not have been zoned for terraforming by the zoning board of the Federation Council, because they're supposed to, like, completely establish that a planet is dead, barren, and won't ever support life before they start this process.
Right, and Picard really, like, gives Mandel the what for about this, like, basically climbs all over the conference room table, you know, basically accusing him of going forward with the terraforming, knowing that life was there. And
yeah,
Mandel,
and it's a lot of fun for Mandel to, like, resist these accusations, because he obviously was a traveling vaudevillian before he became the leading scientist in terraforming. He is so arch.
Yeah, he really is.
He was a Bond villain, right? This actor?
He was, yeah. You know, if you see a character actor in any of the first couple seasons of this show, and they're, like, just sort of barrel-chested, anonymous dudes, you can bet that they were in a James Bond movie at some point.
Absolutely.
What do you mean, a life form? What life form? Federation of Recon Expedition Certified Velara 3 Lifelets.
Understandable, given this particular life form's novel nature.
What is that nature?
Dr. Crusher is still making her determination. Mr. Mandel, you know the Prime Directive.
Are you saying that unknowingly defied it?
He's fun to watch. He's definitely doing a different kind of acting than everybody else on the show, though. It's like, I resist all of your accusations, sir!
I really enjoyed the sweatsuits that they wore.
Yeah.
They were like gray Russell Athletic sweatsuits with, like, a big belt around them.
Yeah, that, like, whatever the terraforming equivalent of Starfleet is, their uniform is, like, I feel like it was, like, teal on the back and gray on the front. Also, they're a weird color combination.
Yeah, they really let themselves go down on that planet surface, I think.
Yeah, except for the babelicious babe. She stayed babish.
Yeah, speaking of the babe, she's pretty distraught over the whole idea of possibly terraforming over a life form. Like she's really troubled by it and emotional. And so Riker and Troy are talking about it. Troy's like, you know, Riker asks Troy, you know, maybe you should go and talk to her. And Troy looks at Riker is like, you might do better than I.
It's such a...
Like,
such
basically
a
saying,
scene.
Basically, like, she's like, I think she wants to fuck you. Maybe you'd have better luck talking to her than me. Why don't you go see what happens? So yeah. Riker goes into her quarters to do some diplomatic relations.
She essentially sicks Riker on this poor woman.
Yeah, and Riker walks right in. The door's unlocked. Again, the door's unlocked. And comforts her, tells her that it's not her fault. So Riker basically goodwill huntings her into believing that it's not her fault. She had no idea. She couldn't have known that this Christmas light was a life form.
It's ultimately kind of a disappointing scene, because she is a little too upset to get down with Riker, and he
doesn't happen.
He's a sexual animal, but he's not
a monster.
He's not a monster, and he takes off before any kind of smooching goes down, and I thought that was a nice move on his part. He let her deal with her grief.
So meanwhile, like, the doctor and Data discovered that, yeah, the crystal's pretty much alive.
100% alive.
Yeah, they know it at this point. And the crystal, go figure, doesn't really like the humans that have captured it and enslaved it on the ship.
And it manages to connect to the universal translator and
starts talking shit.
Its opening salvo is ugly bags of mostly water. It like literally leads with fuck you, you're ugly.
Pretty great.
Yeah.
I think the lights are able to interface with the computer with just a simple USB connection, USB powered Christmas lights.
Yeah. Are you sure it wasn't a Thunderbolt cable?
I don't know. But I think this is another effect that is not helped by the HD reimagining of the show, because you can straight up see the mount of the lights in frame. It's unfortunate.
Yeah, they could have cleaned it up a little bit better, I feel like. So anyways, this thing is getting more and more dangerous and starts to mess with ship systems. They attempt to beam it off, and it dispels the transporter beam just as it dispelled the confinement beam earlier. And they realize they're up shit creek, because this thing is justifiably really mad. This terraforming process has been killing these life forms under the surface of this planet.
Yeah, it's been a Christmas light holocaust down there for as long as the terraforming team's been.
So Picard has to put on his diplomat hat and talk this entity into not killing them, essentially. And I think Troy helps. This entity has been calling them ugly the whole time, and Troy says that the crystal is beautiful to them. All life is beautiful to them, which is a sweet sentiment and may go some way toward smoothing over the misunderstanding.
They say this right before turning down the lights to show it that they mean business.
Yeah, so they realize that some of the compounds in this thing indicate that it is photoelectric. So if they turn off the lights, it's going to start to lose power. And the second they dim the lights, this thing is like begging for mercy, crying uncle in its crazy stilted language.
More light, please.
Only if you will talk to us.
We die. Bags of water kill us. You are like others.
It sounds like the universal translator is a little bit of a CNC device. Like the ship's computer sounds like a sophisticated voice. It's Major Barrett, you know, like talking like a normal person. But the universal translator is, I guess, quite a few generations behind in that respect.
Yeah. Well, I wonder, like, because when they talk to biological aliens or organic aliens, it doesn't have this problem. So maybe it's just because it's like such a different way of life that their communication is challenged. But this thing definitely, like, it sucks at talking.
But they aren't going to tell it that.
No. Or they're also not going to tell it that they've taken to calling it the micro brain.
Yeah. Again. Not nice.
Yeah. A wildly insulting thing to call a species that you just discovered that you didn't think was even theoretically possible.
Damok, Angelad.
But anyways, once the lights are down, the thing is begging for mercy, and they say, like, listen, we don't want to harm you. We just want to end this war. We're not going to fuck with your planet anymore. It was a total mistake. We didn't know that you were alive. We're going to beam you back down, and we're going to, like, put a quarantine up around this planet. And the life form, not really having any other option, agrees to the terms of this treaty.
This episode ended maybe more abruptly than any other. Like, they beam it down to the planet, and then we get an exterior shot of the ship cruising away and a snippet of a captain's log, and Picard's like, we've learned a valuable lesson here about the sanctity of human life. On to the next adventure. And that was it. It was like it was a generic show end that they recorded.
Right. Could have been used for anything.
And I think that speaks to... I was reading some of the production notes for this episode, and they were, like, doing rewrites on the set for this.
Interesting.
Like, I wonder if they just shot all that they could, and there wasn't any way they could shoot an ending, and that's all they could do.
Yeah. Well, for all the failings in terms of, like, I didn't think that the silicon entity was well characterized, the microbrain. I didn't think that was a great character. I didn't think the terraforming station was that well designed as a set. But for all of the failings, I think this episode had, like, gripped me more than some of the previous ones. Like, I felt really engaged in the story. I felt like there were interesting twists and turns. I felt like it was a great use of the kind of scientific abilities of the crew. And, you know, like while Picard is doing kind of detective stuff, Data and the Doctor are doing deductive science stuff. It was fun. It was fun for me to watch this episode.
Yeah, I mean, sci-fi does one of two things. I mean, it's either cool space shoot 'em ups or it's discovering alien creatures, and this checked the second box, and they did it really well.
It was definitely like a fiction of ideas in the best sense, and it is a shame that when we finally get to meet the microbrain, it's just like stilted speech and slinging insults and kind of stupid.
It looked like one of those, you know, outside of a pizza parlor, you stick your quarters in and you get that little plastic ball with a prize inside.
Yeah.
And sometimes that prize is like a jelly ring that lights up.
Yeah.
That's what the microbrain looked like to me.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely looked like something that could be had for 50 cents outside of a drugstore or pizza parlor.
It's weird just because a couple episodes ago you see the crystalline entity and it is amazing and brilliant looking and all CG, and the CG holds up. It like they just did an awesome job with that effect. Yeah. And they really like they just grabbed something out of the prop department, it seemed like, for this one. So
yeah. Well, I think that it was like the kind of thing where it's gonna be so small on screen that they're like not that concerned with what it looks like. It's just supposed to be a point of light, but
right.
The HD resolution is not so kind to that choice.
Yeah, I mean, this episode was as strong story-wise as it was weak visually.
Yeah, absolutely.
He just kept talking in one long, incredibly unbroken sentence, moving from topic to topic so that no one had the chance to interrupt. It was really quite hypnotic, hypnotic.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
You have a drunk Shimoda for this episode?
Incredible. Drunk Shimoda!
Sure. Drunk Shimoda is, of course, our award for a character who is acting drunk, silly, or just having a great time. For me, the drunk Shimoda in this episode is the microbrain. I mean, I guess you can forgive it since perhaps it has never encountered another intelligent life form itself, but hey, like if you're pissed off, like the best way of getting what you want is not leading with an insult. Like this thing, it's so belligerent and shitty to them the whole time.
Okay, that's a good one.
Who's your drunk Shimoda?
I didn't have one until maybe 10 minutes from the end when she revealed herself to me, like kismet. So the microbrain has taken over, you know, the lab, and people are trying to figure out how to get in. They're locked out. They can't,
right.
They can't affect any change to it. And in one of the scenes, they cut to engineering, and there's this old lady in engineering who is relating some vital information about what's happening. Yeah. She is maybe 55 years old. She is an ensign. And she
joined up late in life.
She, you know, has a place of prominence on the engineering team. Like she's a part of the team and she's doing stuff.
Yeah, she is on the radio with the bridge.
I saw her and I'm like, 55-year-old, double divorcee, ensign in engineering, you know, starting her life over. I wanted to know everything about her. Like,
yeah.
Maybe she's doing the steps, you know? She finally gets a ship. She's off exploring the galaxy. Who knows what her life was like before this? But that sense of adventure, that willingness to try new things, that feels very...
I would
very...
love to see the vision board that got her this far.
Yeah. I was really excited for her and happy for her circumstance. And to me, what could be more Shimoda than that, than living your dream, living your truth? So anonymous lady, anonymous 55-year-old lady in engineering, I salute you, my drunk Shimoda.
That is such a good call, Adam. I think I think you're dead on with that one.
There are four lights.
What do we have coming up next?
Next episode is episode 18, Coming of Age. While Wesley endures the grueling Starfleet Academy entrance exam, Captain Picard faces an investigation into his competency as a commander.
Oh, you know, I think I remember something about this episode. This is the first time that we get a really angry admiral coming to the ship and accusing Picard of being a bad captain. We get this through the whole series, right?
Yeah, Captain Picard is constantly having to defend his command of the starship of the flagship of the Federation. I remember there being like some interesting like testing stuff going on with Wesley in this. I think this is the episode where like they make him think that he's making kind of a Sophie's choice about which person to save in a disaster at the testing facility. And in fact, they're just testing his ability to cope with unwinnable. It's like his Kobayashi Maru type deal where they make him think that some choice he's going to make is going to lead to one person's death or another. And they want to see how he deals with that.
I don't remember any of that part of it. I just do remember the parade of admirals who are just very cruel to one Captain Picard. The reception said that this episode represents the ultimate cliche of the jackass interrogator. So I think they mean that in a asshole interrogator, not in a like the jackass interrogator is like stapling his balls to his inner thigh and and snorting wasabi. I think kind of jackass interrogator.
Somebody who's interrogating a jackass.
Oh, right. Yeah, there could be that version too. Neither of those, though. I think we can be fairly certain.
Well, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, that'll be great. That'll be on the next episode of The Greatest Generation. If you ever want to reach out, talk to either of us. We're spending entirely too much time on Twitter having conversations using the hashtag Greatest Gen. And my Twitter hashtag is @cutfortime.
And mine is @BenjaminR, AHR.
Our show music was created by the great Dark Materia. If you want a copy of that track, you can find it in about a dozen websites on the internet.
Do that.
Yeah, so go get it and drive around in your car listening to it at top volume.
I think he made a Worf song too. I haven't heard that one yet.
I don't know, the Picard song's the only one for me.
Yeah.
Alright, I think that'll do it for this episode of The Greatest Generation. We'll see you next time with a brand new episode and two shameful reviewers to take you through it. I've been Adam Pranica.
I've been Ben Harrison. Later.
See ya.
Make it so. Jean-Luc Picard.